AOPA presents Never Again, true pilot stories from the world of general aviation. In this episode, pushing the performance limits of a Cessna 150 almost costs a student pilot his life. Find out what happens in Endangered in the Andes by Stan Taft. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the mid-1960s, living in the Peruvian Andes, where a small group was working hard to establish a wildlife refuge for the endangered vicuna, a wild cousin of the llama and alpaca, which live in the high plains of the towering mountain chain. Poachers, some with automatic weapons, were taking a heavy toll on the vicuna, and it was critical to find a remote and expansive habitat to sustain the animals prized for their soft wool, long reputed to be the world's best. Our headquarters for the preserve were at 13,000 feet MSL, a high elevation but well below the tops of the surrounding 16,000-foot peaks. I was 25 years old, field coordinator for the project, and I felt an aerial survey was needed for an accurate wildlife count and a better understanding of the area. I was also a student pilot, with a few dozen hours of flying time, most of it in champs and tri-pacers. The airplane I had found for the survey was a Cessna 150, owned by a flying club in Nazca, Peru, and used to lift tourists high above the Nazca lines, ancient drawings in the desert that can only be seen from the air. I knew we would be pushing the 100-horsepower airplane's limits by taking it to such a high altitude, but I felt an aerial survey was the only way to conduct a meaningful census of the vicuna population. And that survey would be critical to making an informed recommendation for the future boundaries of the preserve. I asked a pilot at the Nazca Flying Club, Juan, if he had ever flown over the high plains of the Andes, and when he said that he had, I offered to hire him to make another trip for the survey. He quickly agreed. I don't think Juan fully understood density altitude or service ceiling, and unfortunately I left those crucial determinations up to him. Truthfully, I'd forgotten much of what I'd learned in ground school, and I hadn't flown in a couple of years. I was more concerned about getting my project completed than anything else, including our physical safety. It was a bad mistake, and I should have known better. I should have found out more about the limitations of our airplane, and the competence and experience of the pilot. And I failed on both accounts. It was a beautiful October day, springtime in the southern hemisphere, when we took off from Nazca and climbed before heading into the treacherous mountains. Juan was a flight instructor and allowed me to fly from the left seat. As we approached the foothills of the Andes, I turned the controls over to Juan, and he began to maneuver the Cessna 150 toward our destination, the Pampa Galeras Vicuna Preserve, elevation 13,000 feet MSL. It took a couple of hours to make it all the way up to 14,000 feet, the Cessna 150's service ceiling. But looking at the ground, we didn't seem that high since we were only 1,000 feet above my headquarters. I was scanning the area below, and Juan soon let me know all was not well. He said our airplane's flight controls weren't responding in a normal manner and shouted over the laboring engine noise, "Estamos en peril." We're in trouble. I informed him that we could make an emergency landing on the road in front of my headquarters. He flew close to the road and determined that it was too rough and bumpy to safely land, so we tried instead to return to Nazca. We flew to the end of the valley and made a 180-degree turn, not realizing that we had descended below the tops of the rolling hills that lined the valley. Juan tried his best to get the laboring airplane to climb above the rising terrain in our path. By this time, we were perpendicular to the road and a large erosion ditch that ran parallel to it. The stall warning alarm blared out imminent danger as our Cessna 150 neared impact with the rough road. It was a terrifying and sickening sound. The landscape on the high plains is strewn with rocks and boulders. Definitely not the kind of area anyone would choose for an off-field landing. Upon impact, we hit the ground with the yoke full aft and the nose high, but the airplane immediately flipped upside down and began skidding on its back. The sound of screeching metal scraping the rocky ground made a horrible noise as we careened along. Suddenly, the empennage impacted the ditch wall, The tail section absorbed much of the impact and crumpled, while the body of the airplane collapsed into the bottom of the ditch. All movement and noise stopped, and I expected to wake up dead. Dust filled the cockpit and then cleared. All was quiet. Realizing I was still alive, I jerked my seatbelt off and promptly fell onto the bottom of the wing. I turned to check on Juan and saw blood. During our flight, Juan had loosened his seatbelt, and on impact, he hit his head on the instrument panel, which put a large gash over his eye. He regained consciousness and began to move ever so slowly. I helped lower him down and pulled him from the wreckage. In a state of shock, Juan crawled back into the cockpit, grabbed the mic, and began yelling, "Mayday! Mayday!" He didn't realize that the radio's antenna was embedded in the moist ground. I turned off the electrical master switch, but our wing tanks had not ruptured, and we lost no fuel during the crash. Juan and I stumbled arm in arm to my headquarters, where we met a surprised group of game wardens who had seen the crash and couldn't believe we were alive. We couldn't either. I administered first aid to Juan's head wound, and we rested until some surveyors came by to see why the airplane they had seen enter the valley hadn't departed. They offered to ride us down the mountain in the back of their pickup, and it was a long, uncomfortable, dusty 2-hour trip. I now had a new appreciation for density altitude. Despite the fact that Juan was the pilot in command, I was a student pilot with enough knowledge that I should have known better than to take an aircraft into high terrain that exceeded its capabilities. I'm fortunate to have lived another day. My only physical injury was a bruised ear. The Peace Corps doctor checked me over and found me sound of body but weak of mind. He threatened to send me home if I allowed anything else like this to happen. Fortunately, I was able to fulfill my contract, complete my work, and return home safely.
The Never Again Podcast is brought to you by AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and by the Air Safety Foundation. You can read more Never Again stories online at aopa.org/neveragain. You can also visit the Air Safety Foundation at aopa.org/asf. The Never Again Podcast is produced by Royce Earle. Thanks for listening. Fly safe.